Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Joe Comerford, who's the Executive Director of National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joe Comerford.
It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me, Ian.
And, Joe, the negotiations that have been going on for some time with Senator Patty Murray and Congressman Paul Ryan in secret. I mean, let's begin with that. You object to the lack of transparency here.
Well, sure. I believe that the federal budget is really the people's budget, if you will. You know, you and I, through payroll and individual income taxes, we pay 80% of the bills, right? Generate 80% of the revenue, and as part of our contract with government, we get to elect folks, and we get to be in dialogue with them as they broker the nation's business. So I need it to be open and transparent so that everybody who's paying the bills can weigh in.
So this is a record-breaking Congress in as much as it's been the least productive. It's enacted 49 laws, the fewest since 1947. But there's also, in spite of the gridlock that we've seen, apparently there's at least reports indicate that within these budget deals, there is some pressure to have a deal, because if they don't have a deal, then that invites another government shutdown, which the Republicans don't necessarily want to have during a election year.
Absolutely. They don't want two things. They don't want a continuation of sequestration, which is going to kick in for another round January 15th, and they certainly don't want another government shutdown. You know, we had 16 days of it in October. It was wildly unpopular, rightfully so, with the American public. And so both of those things are really politically unpalatable. But we've got this budget conference committee charged with brokering a deal. And as you say, Senator Patty Murray in the Senate and Congressman Paul Ryan in the House are bringing their folks together, these 29 lawmakers, to broker a deal. And reports have been lukewarm to terrible, up until pretty recently. Just recently, the tide seems to be turning, and they're talking about squeaking out a pretty small deal with something called top-line numbers, which are basically the numbers that the appropriators, the folks who decide what to spend the money on, need to pass something called omnibuses, which are just big spending bills, and get the government running.
So this is a mini deal at best, and the deadline is December the 13th. Given the number of work days, they're on vacation now. That doesn't leave a lot of time, does it, really?
Well, no, actually, you know, the House's first day in 2014 is January 7th. So that means that there's just a ton of work to be done between now and then, largely all of it behind closed doors. And once, if they manage to get past this December 13th hurdle, they have almost no time to get this done. People have said on both sides of the aisle, you know, if we can get these top-line numbers, if the Budget Conference Committee can simply say how we're going to make the money and how we're going to spend it, that they can get a budget passed. But like now in many scenarios past, we're running out of time, and the only thing preventing us is lawmakers' inability to have clear and transparent and fact-filled discussions about things like taxes, and things like portions of the government that are highly controversial, like military spending or health care.
Again, I'm speaking with Joe Comerford, who's the Executive Director of the National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. But at the heart of it, though, is this impasse, which we've seen before, between Republicans and Democrats, where the Republicans go to the mat for millionaires and billionaires, and the Democrats usually lose because the other side extorts to the point where they don't, you know, they'll take the whole house down and crash the economy. So with these cuts coming up, $50 billion a year out of both domestic spending and defense spending, the simplest way would be to offset these blunt sequester cuts would be with getting some revenue. And apparently inside these meetings, Representative Paul Ryan, the House Budget Chairman, has resisted ending a group of tax loopholes for the very rich, which would be the easiest way out. And he, in fact, is proposing all kinds of additional fees that would impact middle class and working Americans.
You're quite right. The kind of revenue that they're talking about now is exactly that. It's fee-based. And some of the concerns about fee-based revenue is that it can be regressive rather than progressive. And let me just give you a couple of numbers just to give you a sense of the magnitude of some of these quote-unquote tax loopholes or tax, some call them tax expenditures, tax givebacks. In 2013, so in this calendar year, offshoring corporate profits will cost the U.S. Treasury $42 billion in revenue. Put another way, U.S.-based multinational corporations are allowed to park their profits offshore and not pay taxes on them in this country. That's a piece of policy. That doesn't happen by magic, as you well know. That's a piece of policy wrought by Congress, and it's going to cost the nation $42 billion. More than that, almost double than that, is the capital gains tax break, which costs actually, so that means transferred revenue. So not earned income, but transferred transferred wealth. Capital gains tax break costs in just this year alone a whopping $83 billion. So if we put those two together, you know, we're at more than $120 billion in revenue lost to the U.S. Treasury just because of those two tax breaks alone, just one year. And of course, those two tax breaks wildly disproportionately benefit the wealthiest among us.
So in terms of Congressman Ryan's motivation, we know that he and most of the Republicans will go to the mat and even shut down the government to protect tax breaks for the millionaires and billionaires. That is, seems to be their primary function. But obviously, Ryan has a bit of a problem with the Tea Party. I mean, the Tea Party are actually quite happy with this non-productive Congress. They're nihilists, you know. They want to break everything. They don't want anything to work. The government itself is their enemy. So how is he going to navigate that, do you think? On the one hand, there's the pragmatists in his party that want a deal because they don't want to have to go through another government shutdown. And then you've got the lunatic fringe who have already displayed their nihilism.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, coming out of the shutdown, one of the pieces of fallout was the absolute fracture of the Republican Party, you know, and many, many analysts and pundits were saying, you know, in fact, this could be the silver lining in this moment, this terrible moment for our nation where government shut down. We got to see the real rabid, very conservative Tea Party element saying, you know, let's do what Grover Norquist says. Let's shrink this government down to the size where we can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the tub. And it's chilling to watch that at work. And, you know, I think Paul Ryan, if he's smart, is going to make a measured case for government. And, you know, hopefully if he's listening to poll after poll from the American people, he'll be able to make a case for revenue, especially revenue that disproportionately is geared toward consolidating wealth with the, you know, the various very wealthy among us.
Well, in a perverse kind of way, this dysfunctional sequester is the only way that I think for the longest time that anybody's been able to cut the defense budget, which just grows and grows and grows and has no relationship to any threats the nation faces. There are no great national threats anymore since the end of the Cold War. People, you know, the hawks try to gin up problems with China, but they have their own domestic problems of just holding on to riding the tiger of extreme change within that country and the expectations of its people who chafe under this corrupt communist government. So you have, you know, this complete disconnect from reality where we're still spending more on defense than we spent during the Cold War. And so at least this sequester does cut the military. And, of course, military hawks and their cheerleaders are crying as though the whole place is going to hell in the handbasket when it's only $50 billion. But unfortunately, it's equally matched by cuts on the domestic side, which has already been cut down to the bone, you know, things like medical research and the FBI and some of the basic functions of government. So I'm sort of worried that they're going to make a deal where they're going to sell out on the only chance we've ever had to have a rational reduction in this incredibly bloated defense budget.
Well, you know, Senator Murray's budget, which followed Congressman Ryan's after the president's budget in the spring, you know, Senator Murray is making a case for cutting Department of Defense, certainly not as much as others have. I'm sure you've had guests on from the Sustainable Defense Task Force. This is a bipartisan effort that found actually $1 trillion in the lowest hanging possible fruit in defense cuts over a 10-year period. Senator Murray doesn't go that far, but she has made a good case for doing, as you say, you know, taking away the weapons dedicated to the Cold War threats, the non-existent Cold War threats, and retuning. And I do think you're quite right that the issue at hand, there's two issues at hand with sequester. One is, if indeed it holds, DOD cannot get any more wiggle exceptions and or cut exceptions. And if it doesn't hold, then in fact the Department of Defense that's risen 48% in the last decade, where social programs have actually not kept pace with government, Department of Defense really has to be overhauled for both efficacy, waste, fraud, and abuse, the usefulness of that, you know, that larger institution and all the sub-institutions underneath of it in terms of our nation's security. It must be brought to pass, right? It's 57% of all discretionary spending in this nation goes to this military war, nuclear weapons, and foreign military aid combined. And that's not taking into account Homeland Security and the FBI, the CIA, and a multitude of other quote-unquote security-related entities in the nation, leaving domestic programs starved. As you say, they're cut to the bone right now.
So what's your sense then of whether there'll be a deal before the 13th of December, and what kind of a deal do you think it'll be? We've only got a minute or two left.
I think they're going to squeak out a small deal. That's what a colleague on the Hill told me, part of the committee. I think they're going to squeak out a small deal. I think it's going to be very anemic with regard to taxes. I think there will be cuts held, not as many cuts as sequester, not as deeply cut as sequester. I do think they'll do a modest cut to DOD, but not nearly enough, and certainly not enough to stem the growth trajectory that many in the nation would prefer. And I just think it leaves it, you know, it makes the case imperative for you and I and your listeners to make our priorities known, because this fight won't be over on December 13th and it won't be over on January 15th.
Well, Joe Comerford, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, just a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Joe Comerford, who's Executive Director of the National Priorities Project, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization dedicated to making complex federal budget information transparent and accessible. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how the consumer Financial Protection Bureau is now going to take over an oversight over companies that collect payments on student loans, which, of course, are at a record level, having doubled in recent years to $1.2 trillion.